I'm Matt.
And I'm Victoria.
And this is When Gathering Light.
Join us as we gather stories, resources, and hope, with plenty of tears and laughter along the way, in partnership with our true source of light, Jesus.
Up ahead, there is a time for weeping. Up ahead, there is a time for healing. Up ahead, there is a time for singing.
Hi, everyone. This is Matt, and I'm sitting across from the talented Victoria, beautiful and talented. And this is a new episode of When Gathering Light. And today we are going to talk about maybe somewhat of a tricky topic about how one person in a system will go and get healthy and what that does to the system. And how, depending on which part you're playing in that system, you might work through it. So, hi, Victoria.
Hi, Matt. Hello, everyone. It's good to be here again. It's great to be recording another episode. And this is a topic that is near and dear to both of our hearts, but is also, I believe, something I journey alongside as a therapist with families all the time. So I think it's a great topic to explore from all different vantage points of what do you do when you're in therapy and you're getting well and you're working on things and maybe not everyone is maybe at the same pace as you or hasn't begun therapy or is not doing their work. Or what if you find yourself on the other end of someone's therapy and you are recognizing that the things that used to work in your family or your system or your communication isn't working anymore, and it's forcing you to be pretty uncomfortable and have to face some hard truths about yourself. So that's really the topic. And we didn't want to just make it about husbands and wives because I think it can be on any vantage point, you know, siblings, parent to child, child to parent.
It's not just therapy. I mean, you could be getting sober or you could be making some significant change in your life that may, in fact, at some point affect the system, right? So, I mean, that's the echoing back into the system that one of us getting healthy may do to that system.
Yeah, that's such a great point because I was even thinking about like the struggle we've had at times of just in our eating routine, like, hey, I want to make this change or I want to do this, and how it affects the other person, how it affects you, how we have to think about eating around that or preparing meals around that. So it can get really tricky.
Yeah, but that's kind of a one-sided deal, though, because if you say, I want to change the way we eat, you do most of the cooking, so I don't really. I just salute that. Now, if I was to say I want to change the way we're eating around here, that wouldn't have much impact.
Well, if I change the way we're eating, you just might hide your snacks in the car or in your dresser drawers. I'm not saying that you necessarily do that now, but I'm just saying.
You're just saying. I'm glad you're just saying.
Right. That might be what happens, but nonetheless.
Right.
So tell me, Matt, a little bit about when you think of this topic, what shows up for you? You know, what gets brought to the surface for you?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a kind of a sense of breaking away from a habit or a pattern. You know, it's interesting. I was just reading a book the writer was talking about C.S. Lewis commenting on miracles and how miracles are really the breaking of old established patterns. And I had to think about that for a while, and I have a tendency to agree with him because once our brain becomes established with a pattern that is repetitive and goes over and over and over again, like addiction, or, you know, just many different patterns, thinking patterns, things like that, breaking those is really sometimes a miracle. And so, you know, we are born into systems, you know, we work in systems, we You know, we are educated in systems, and not all of them are healthy, obviously. And it doesn't have to be, I don't think, disastrous unhealthy. You know, it can be just not a great place to grow in. Stagnation, maybe, you know. So I think that when one of the people in that system decides they're going to make some changes, and hopefully those changes are healthy changes, it, I think, has a tendency to disrupt the entire system. As I said before, we went on air, it sends this echo effect, this, you know, ripple effect through the system.
Yeah, that's really interesting to think about. I'm currently doing this work with a really skilled practitioner, Tim, and he's doing some myofascia release, right? And some myofascia work. And that's one of the things I've noticed in this process, because I had some issues with some chronic pain. And as some of the other forms of somatic work were not keeping it in check. So I would go and then I would feel the pain again because it would bounce right back. And what I've noticed in the work we're doing is that my body is creating new patterns of the way it stands, the way it sits, the way it walks, because we're releasing all this basic tension or blockage or building up of my fascia. And so the fascia is basically the tissue, the connective tissue in your muscles and in your skin. And it's fascinating. But my brain goes to families like that, right? I think about how when somebody is shifting or dealing with like a pain, you know, a trigger point for them, how it has this ripple effect throughout the body. And so sometimes individuals can separate or need distance or want to address something in the family, and they may do it really well, but sometimes they may do it really destructively. Mm. Sometimes they may do it really hurtfully. Sometimes they may respond in the opposite extreme. If a parent is super aggressive, maybe what they do is just stop talking altogether and not responding to another parent. So it's equally as dysfunctional, right? But it is confusing and disorienting for the other person on the other end who doesn't get communication as to why that person is cutting off a relationship with them. So it's interesting to think that it can affect us from all different vantage points, and it does have a ripple effect.
Yeah, no matter what relationship we're talking about, you come into that relationship with certain biases and certain ways of thinking, and, you know, they're almost always is some level of clash with another person because they have their own biases. They have their own ways of thinking and doing things, you know, and that's what happens in a lot of relationships. How do you resolve some of these conflicts that go on between the way you think and act and the way I think and act? And when you decide that you don't want to think and act that way anymore, the other person has to adjust. It doesn't mean they have to change. It just means they have to adjust, right? Because you're acting different. You're disrupting the system. And I see it a lot in my world of addiction, you know, where somebody will say, you know what, I'm not going to drink anymore, or I'm not going to drug anymore. All of a sudden, that sends a ripple through the family or through the relationships. And people have to adjust.
Yeah. As you were talking, I just thought about the disciples, right? I thought about, you know, the disciples and those who traveled with Jesus. I thought about how challenging it had to have been for them, because they all kind of in many ways disruptively and quickly left, and their families or their vocations, and they got this new calling to pick everything up and go. And then they formed this secondary new system. And it had to have been pretty tumultuous at times. It had to have been pretty challenging at times. I don't think that they were always sitting around and agreeing. I mean, we know some of the big moments because scripture tells us about some of the big moments. But I often contemplate some of the more singular moments that we might not know about.
Yeah, I mean, you've been fishing for generations, and now you walk into the house and go, honey, I'm leaving. I'm going to follow Jesus. you know, that had to be a little bit disruptive, I would think. So, that's a tremendously unique situation. But yeah, I mean, every one of those families were disrupted.
And just not only their families were disrupted, but how challenging it had to have been for the disciples to get along with each other,
to agree
always, because they all come from some such different backgrounds, agreeing with what it means to be a disciple of Christ.
Yeah,
I think we still find that in the current climate of what does it really mean to be a disciple of Christ?
Right.
I mean, that's a whole nother topic that we don't have to get into, but just saying, you know, the different vantage points and perspectives.
So you hear a lot of different responses to change in your office. You know, you have someone sitting in front of you who's talking about the changes that they're either in the middle of or beginning or, you know, what are some of the responses that you hear from them concerning the partner, spouse, family member when this goes out?
Yeah. Well, I always tell individuals whether it's their, you know, that therapy is risky. You're risking relationships because at some point on the other side, parts of you are going to be different. Parts of you are going to see the world differently. And so you are going to put tension into your relationships. Automatically, that's going to happen, even your relationship with yourself. And so I often think that, you know, helping them understand that there's a risk inherent in beginning to work a program, work recovery, all those things. And then I think also, secondly, I have yet to see this not happen was where the identified sick person, whoever that was, you know, the identified problem, when they get their footing, when they start to find a voice, when they start to confront some of the things that maybe brought them to therapy, it will disrupt the other person on the other side. And that can create a lot of tension because that person may or may not be willing to go to therapy. And so at that point, that can really put a strain on the person in therapy. And so there's definitely different combinations of it. And sometimes I've worked with some family members who are estranged with loved ones and they don't fully understand why. You know, a couple mothers whose children were really distant with them. And what we tried to do and what we focused on is, you know, without that child telling you the purpose of it, the reason for it, let's explore what you can do to be healthy. And what does it mean if that child comes back towards you, how to engage with them? And what is your unhealthy family system patterns? So instead of trying to just be wounded, you are wounded, but victimized, staying in that victim mentality, let's talk about how this is an opportunity for you to grow and change and heal in this season of estrangement. Because estrangement isn't always long-term. Sometimes it's just short-term. And sometimes it is more permanent. It's hard to know.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that there is always risk in therapy. Well, I think there's probably also a lot of risk in not doing anything about whatever's going on in your life.
Such a good point, right?
Right. I mean, sometimes you need to say, this is where I need, this is the direction I need to go in. This is where God is taking me, you know, because staying where I am is no longer a choice. You know, I always say the pain to stay the same has to be greater than the pain to change, right? And so they've gotten to that point where they said, I can't live like this anymore. I want to be, you know, I want to deal with these things that are, you know, crowding out my joy. So when someone comes to you in that state of mind and they're motivated, right? Do you caution them at all about, you know, what might happen out of this change that they're ready to make? Is there a cautionary, you know, discussion?
Yeah, sure. Change is always risky. And what is actually, what does change represent? You know, what is healthy change? What is dysfunctional change? You know, oftentimes as people, as humans, we tend to go from one extreme to another. Like, that's just the way we learn. That's the way we experience. So let's say we're frustrated or we grew up in this extreme, let's say with a parent who is really controlling. So we may then move to a system where we become more detached or laissez-faire with our children, or we may want to be friends with them, or we may not want them to feel uncomfortable. And so we've moved to this opposite And in those opposites is when we oftentimes can then find the middle, like, ooh, that doesn't feel good either. All or nothing thinking doesn't feel good either. And so, you know, finding that middle ground and, you know, change management is been around for a long time. I mean, who moved my cheese? Like, remember that book went around? Right. I feel like all the CEOs gave it to their employees right about the time they were going to let, you know, massive layoffs. Like, I felt like it was kind of manipulative, a little traumatizing for some employees. Nonetheless, having said that,
or they said, here, distribute this to the rank and file. We won't be doing anything about my cheese, but you guys go ahead and move your cheese around and things
move
like
your
that.
Cheese.
Right.
But it is true, you know, change management in anything is really hard. You know, at Renew, we just built another office, and it just having a longer hallway was challenging for some of us just spatially. And then just like, well, what does it mean for the organization, and how do we, you know, manage that and deal with it? And what are the messages being sent? And it's just amazing. Like, change just in and of itself can be really challenging.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at the life of Christ, I mean, there was a moment in time where I'm sure there were some friends of Jesus who were hanging out at the wedding of Cana, and he was, you know, kind of being a little, aloof and saying, you know, he didn't really want to get involved in whatever his mother was cooking up. And then, you know, you see the changes that go on in his life and the people he heals and things like that. And then he accepts his ultimate sacrifice. That's a whole lot of change in a short period of time. And I'm sure the disciples and other people that followed him were like, wow, what is going on here? Mm-hmm. How do I react to this? I mean,
yeah.
So son of man.
It happened pretty quickly. And it's interesting to contemplate and do kind of a walk around that scripture. And did Jesus know his mother was going to, ask him to step forward? Did he know? Was he caught off guard?
Based on his reaction, I think he was. Yeah.
Right. And again, you know, what did she think about all of that? Like, in her heart and in her mind, you know, was she just organically just speaking out of the belief of what she knew he was capable of being? So calling him forward into a change?
Yeah.
Or was that more of her anxiety or her own stress?
I thought it was kind of bold trust, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, she went out on a limb here. I don't know if she said anything to anybody at the wedding, like, I'm going to take care of this, or if she just kind of went to the side and asked him. But I thought it was really bold trust that she knew that he could do it. You know, she believed in her son, who was the son of God. But that's a great testimony to the change that Christ went through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he calls us all to change. You know,
yeah.
I think he calls us all to growth. And in my world, it's usually some form of surrender. You know, the only way we really, truly, I think, let God in is if we surrender some of the power, some of that ego, you know, state, and say, I don't have the answers, you know, and I want to change. And in AA, we talk about a power greater than ourselves, right? What is that power that we need to change?
That letting go and surrendering and accepting that I really have no control over this, but what I do have control over is how I navigate this experience, how I treat people in it, how I treat myself in it, You know, those are the big factors. And I think, too, it is threatening. You know, I've been on the other side of people changing and sometimes not understanding what's happening and it affecting me negatively or hurting me or hurting my perception of them or our relationship or self. And then I've also been on the other side of change where the person changed in a way that wasn't their best. They weren't living their best version of themselves. They were changing in a way that was maybe destructive to themselves. And they isolated and they, you know, shut themselves out or shut themselves down or pulled away from. And so I know that can be really hard to be on the other side of that type of change as well. Because how hard do you push in? How hard do you lean in? Where are your boundaries? What are your need to remain safe? Where are some of the values that you have and for yourself, for that friendship, for that relationship, whatever it may be. So it is really hard.
So if you're sitting out there listening to this and you're trying to determine whether you need to make a significant change in your life, what are some of the things that you would tell someone when they're considering that? First, maybe the question would be, how do they identify a system that is not healthy?
Yeah, I think curiosity, exploring, trying to do... I love in AA, they talk about the moral inventory, do that internal inventory of like, hey, what's going on inside of me? And then, hey, what's externally happening? What's the patterns that I'm seeing? I had an individual that I was working with, and she had been doing a lot of work on her relationship with her mom. And so she was coming to terms with some books that she was reading about emotionally immature parents, right? And so she's been reading this book. And at one point, she had this breakthrough because she said to me, Victoria, the truth is I could spend a lot of energy processing how my mom was and my dad were and are emotionally immature, or I could actually get really honest with you about how I'm emotionally immature as an adult. Mm. And it was this moment, like we were telehealth and I was just looking at her and I, had like tears in my eyes and I was like, that was really brave. Mm. And her being able to go into that space where she was able to say, as a result of the way I was raised, this is how it shows up in me. And it was this really sacred space I held for her in this place to comfort her. And she had so much compassion for how her parents got there, which out of that came like this deep sense of compassion, but also understanding that I can't keep entering into that if I want to change, if I want to grow, if I don't want to be this way at work.
Well, who does she have more control over in the long run, right?
That's it.
Yeah, I mean, you can spend a lot of time, and I have, trying to get people to change. And if they don't want to, they're not going to. And if they're not motivated, they're not going to. But you can change yourself, and you have certainly a lot more power and a lot more control over that situation.
Yeah.
And then what I often say to new guys in recovery is, just become a living, breathing example of what healthy living looks like. That radiates, I mean, you can talk all you want, but if people look at you and go, wow, this guy is really living a sober life. And we have a saying, I want what you have. Then I think you're really embodying what positive change can look like. And then the other person has to decide, right? Am I going to fight back? Am I going to, discredit? How am I going to deal with this other person changing? Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of those, thoughts in your head as far as having people come to you and say, my spouse is changing, my, child is changing.
Yeah,
how do I deal with that change?
I think validating how disruptive or disorienting or confusing it may be, helping them to just identify how it feels for them as a person, what they're experiencing, the tension in it, and to also get curious about what they can do to grow in that response or grow in that challenge or, you know, almost within themselves. I work with several adult women who have adult children who are very much, because the younger generations are such a huge advocates of wellness, right? You know, some of it is extreme and unhealthy, and you know, that's for another topic, but some of it is very valid and authentic and true. And so instead of being, you know, offended by that, learning how to really listen to what your child is saying. I had a client whose adult daughter kind of got really angry with her about something. And, you know, she came in like, just, see, I'm this bad mom, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, you're a good mom. Your daughter's verbalizing it to you. Like, no, she's trusting you to take her anger and do something productive with it.
Yeah.
So how can you hold that space, respond, and how can you grow? And in that moment, that client was able to go all the way to her history and talk about some of her wounds in her child with her mother that she, in all the years I worked with her, would not open up. And so it became like her daughter became the impetus of this huge growth inside of her. And then the way she was able to respond to her daughter's anger, because how her daughter responded wasn't the greatest, but there was a nugget of truth in what she was saying. And when her mom could show up for that, and it created this conduit of a new understanding between the two of them. Yeah. So again, I think we have to be willing to accept that our children are going to, or our loved ones at some point are going to challenge us.
Well, you bring up an interesting point, and that is this multi-generational passing down of not very healthy behavior, you know, and I think sometimes over several generations, it becomes the norm for people. This is how we deal with it. We just never talk about things, or we have secrets, or we, you know, we you know, you don't air your dirty laundry. And some of these things that I think came over on the immigrant boats from, you know, parts of Europe, and you know, we want to fit in, so we don't talk about anything. And that gets handed down. And I think it becomes these, you know, these things that become unhealthy ways of dealing with things. Mm-hmm. I mean, it certainly was in my family.
Yeah.
So how do you, what, you know, when someone's sitting in your office going, I have this, we have these very unhealthy ways of dealing with family issues. How do you get them on a road to breaking some of those barriers?
I don't know if I personally can get them on the road. I think what gets them on the road is their own willingness to not stay trapped in the circumstance and to get curious about where it came from, what part they contribute to it, and how to be part of the solution or the growth or the impetus of that change. And so I think that takes a lot of courage, and it takes a lot of, you know, ego strength, you know, sense of strength and sense of like, it's really humbling to admit you don't have all the answers. And it's really humbling to admit that you are part of the problem. Mm. And oftentimes we want to say, well, you, but it's like, here's what I'm contributing to the problem. If I don't want to have to tell you everything that you're doing, I'm just going to tell you how I'm contributing and then how the dynamic is actually affecting me. And I think sometimes that can be one of the most productive ways for us to elicit change. And again, we're talking about individuals who can sit down and talk with others. I mean, there are times where it's just not safe to. It's not going to be safe or healthy that maybe you are choosing to have no contact, because even telling them, I'm going to have no contact with you, is going to have a visceral response towards you. They're going to rage on you, be aggressive, shame, victim blame, like all the stuff. So it's not just one-sided. You know, this is such a complex conversation that we could probably have for a really long time. And we're just getting, you know, towards the end of this. And what I really want to impress is that there's no easy solution, right? There's no quick fix, but it happens. It is the backlash of trying to do some self-work, is to at some point find yourself on one end or the other of this dynamic.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have to sometimes give people the language?
Yeah, and there's just, I mean, we have a plethora of resources and materials. And I mean, isn't that why some of why we do this is to normalize some of the process that people are going through as they're seeking light, as they're seeking wellness or healing or a new way of being in their life,
yeah,
or their life circumstances?
Yeah, you know, I deal with, or I have a couple of guys in my life who are dealing with teenage children, and it seems like the language, the behavior is so different in their growing up years than it was for us. You know, children that don't want to drive cars and you know, some of the things that were so important to us. I mean, I'm one of eight kids. We couldn't wait to get our hands on the keys. In fact, I don't think any of us waited until we had a license. I think we were out driving around before, you know, before we were legal.
I think you make a point that not every, like, for some, change is really scary, and it creates almost a freezing response, almost an avoidance response. And I have no doubt, and this is really good. I mean, we could probably explore this at another topic or another time, is just, you know, the responses in our nervous systems post-COVID. I mean, we are a different society, a different world because of it. And so there is a lot more avoidance in the younger generations, and a lot higher rates of significant mental health as a result of what they went through in these crucial years. So yeah, we're just beginning to see it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate the fact that we were able to just contemplate this and explore this together. And for those of you who are listening and are in embarking in change, you know, continue to dig deep into the word of Christ and continue to dig into your resources, your counselor, you know, your support system, you know, as you just navigate, you know, the challenges that we all face when we're in these situations of change.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think God will lead us where we need to go. So if we're sincere and authentic, yeah. All right. Well, thank you for listening. And we hope to see, well, we don't see anyone, but we hope to speak to you again soon. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Goodbye.
There is a time for